Chapter 7. The Peripatetic Barber.
"We're trapped here,"
Barbie said stormily.
"And I want you to do something about it, Rick Brandt. If you don't call Steve Ames and get permission for us to go to the mainland, I'll do it myself."
Rick sighed. He had tried to point out that Barbie was being illogical. Neither the Morrisons nor the Brandts were trapped anywhere. It was just that common sense required the Morrisons to be careful. Barbie drove home another point.
"Steve gave us a cover story. What good is a cover story if you don't use it?"
Scotty grinned at Rick's expression of resignation. "Better give up, bro," he advised. Jan hadn't said anything. She just looked at Rick in a beseeching way that said as much as all of Barbie's arguments. Rick shook his head unhappily. He knew when he was licked. Coming right down to it, he didn't have the say-so on Jan leaving the island anyway. He had taken a stand against her going to Whiteside, based half on his intuition and half on the knowledge that a secret soon ceased to be one when it's flaunted in public. And Jan's presence was a part of the big secret on Spindrift. He stood up and shrugged. "Chances are it'll be all right. But if Jan is recognized by any of the enemy..."
"Steve isn't even sure there is an enemy,"
Barbie pointed out swiftly.
"How can you be so sure?"
Rick didn't answer. He turned and went into the house, the others at his heels. In the library, he consulted the schedule Steve had given them, so that they would know where to reach him at any time. The agent was at Yannick headquarters in Washington today. Rick got the number and asked for Steve's extension. In a moment, he had the agent on the wire. "Let's scramble," he said and threw the switch. Then, "Steve, Barbie wants to take Jan to Whiteside. What do you think?" Steve hesitated before he answered. "It's a little hard to give reasons why she shouldn't go, Rick. Have you checked her on the cover story?"
"Not yet. I will, though, if you say the word."
Again, Steve hesitated, and Rick knew the agent was very much in his own position. There was no reason to believe it would do any harm, and yet... "Let her go," Steve said finally. "Only ask her and Barbie not to get into any public parades, okay? You know?"
"I know," Rick affirmed.
"All right, Steve. When is Marks coming?"
"We're not certain yet. Ask your father. Marks is having some trouble with the computations."
"Okay, Steve. We'll see you soon." He hung up and turned to the others. "He says all right, but please don't get into any public parades. In other words, Barbie, don't cover too much territory."
Scotty spoke up. "We better tell Duke and Jerry to leave it out of the paper."
Duke Burrows was editor, and Jerry Webster the reporter for the Whiteside paper. Both were good friends.
"They'll play ball," Rick agreed. "Well, young ladies, when is this big safari?"
Barbie consulted her watch.
"Right now. We'll dress and you can fly us over."
"Then right now means in an hour. Okay, we'll be ready."
Upstairs, Rick and Scotty washed and changed into what Scotty called shore-going clothes that were only slightly less informal than their dungarees and t-shirts. As they finished and sat down to wait for the girls, Rick picked up one of the radio units on the workbench. They were all finished, although untested. A few final decorative touches remained for Barbie's plastic headset, including sending in some rhinestones for her. That would make it look like any other plastic bauble when finished.
"Let's get some fresh batteries while we're in town," Rick suggested.
"Then we can check these out tonight."
"Okay, remind me to pick up a new mouthpiece for the lung Jan uses. She says the one that's on it now is too big and uncomfortable. It hurts her mouth."
Jan had become proficient underwater with only a few hours of practice. Rick had led the girls through the entire series of underwater maneuvers with the lungs, including practice in sharing one lung between them. He was satisfied that they both had a thorough understanding of team swimming and enough sense to stay out of at least the more obvious troubles that novices can get into. He was content now to let them go off on their own, which they did fairly often.
After Rick's estimated hour, the girls were ready, except that Barbie had to make a phone call. She spent another 15 minutes arranging a small get-together at a friend's home to introduce Jan to her chums.
"Now,"
she said brightly,
"we're ready. Are you?"
Rick wisely refrained from comment. 10 minutes later, the four were in the Brant's car, en route to Barbie's destination. Rick dropped the girls off and arranged to pick them up in 2 hours. Then he turned the car toward town. "Let's visit Duke and Jerry," he suggested. Scotty looked at him. "You're still bothered by something, aren't you?" Rick shrugged. It was hard to pinpoint the way he felt. He tried to put it into words. "I've talked to scientists, including Parnell Winston. None of them has ever heard of an ailment like the thing that struck the team scientists. Winston especially knows a lot because he studied the human brain extensively. He doesn't even know of anything similar." Scotty knew all this because he had been present, but talking aloud helped to make things clearer, so he only commented, "And where does that leave us?"
"At the starting line. We haven't moved an inch forward, but at least, if medical history seems to have no record of any such cases, we can assume something new and different caused the scientists to go off the beam."
"Yeah, but if some enemy caused it, how was it done?"
"Glad you asked that," Rick answered gloomily. "Wish someone could answer. Anyway, we know why it was done, if it was done. It was to cause trouble with the project. That would be important enough for an enemy to go to a lot of trouble."
Scotty shook his head. "The thing that sticks in my craw is, how come only two of the scientists got hit? Why wasn't the same thing used on the others? If anything was used at all, that is."
Rick was bothered by the same point, and he had no answer.
Nor did Steve Ames, with whom they had discussed the problem. To both boys, the puzzle was more of an interesting problem to be solved. If some enemy really had penetrated the project and somehow caused disruption of the scientists' brains, then the people nearest and dearest to both of them were also in jeopardy. The Spindrift group now provided 3 out of 5 of the scientists for the new project team. Rick swung into the main street and into the public parking lot. The Whiteside Morning Record was in the heart of town, only a block away. Next to the parking lot was a hardware store where Rick planned to buy batteries, and diagonally across the street was the sports center. Nothing in Whiteside was very far from anything else. It was a typical small town. It took only a moment to buy a box of batteries. They were the type used in hearing aids. Then the boys crossed the street to the sports center. Extra mouthpieces for the lungs were in stock. They chose one that seemed softer and smaller than the regulation models, and then started for the newspaper. 2 doors away from the sports center was the town's only barber shop. As they passed, Scotty suddenly grabbed Rick's arm and said hurriedly, "Come back here." Quickly, he led the way out of sight of the barbershop windows. Rick looked at him curiously.
"What'd you see?"
Scotty's forehead wrinkled. "I saw something, but it's so unlikely I'm not sure. Rick, I thought I saw the barber from Washington, the one with the massage machine."
Rick's mouth opened in astonishment.
"No. You're kidding, right?"
Scotty shook his head.
"No, I'm not. I said I wasn't sure, but I don't want to stand in the front and look, because if it is the barber, he'd recognize us."
Rick thought quickly. "Come on."
Back inside the sports center, he went to the manager and borrowed a powerful monocular, a pocket telescope that was really one half of a pair of binoculars. Then he and Scotty went across the street, taking care to keep out of sight of the barber shop by using parked cars as cover. Rick found a vantage point behind a sedan that had all its windows open. He focused the monocular on the barber shop window. Vince Lardner, the shop's owner, and until now the sole barber, was cutting the hair of a man Rick recognized as a local resident. A second barber was cutting the hair of another local man, but the barber had his back to the street for the moment. Rick waited patiently. Scotty asked,
"You see anything?"
"Only his back. Wait a second." Presently, the barber spun the chair around and walked to the sink. In a moment, he turned, and his face came into full view in the tight close-up the powerful glass provided. Rick sank his teeth into his lip and handed the glass to Scotty wordlessly. The pieces were beginning to fall into place now, and the assumption that the project had been penetrated was a long step closer to proven fact. The Washington barber had come to Whiteside.
"I wonder what he's after," Scotty asked.
"One thing is for sure," Rick stated grimly. "He isn't here just to cut hair."